Buenos días, Lizeth. How are you?
Lizbeth.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Lizbeth. Yo siempre ando bautizando a la gente, girl.
People call me, I go by Liz too. Uh-huh. Same reason, but I think it's Liz, Lizbeth, whichever works.
I mean, it's a beautiful name, Lizbeth. Doctora Lizbeth, welcome. Welcome to Embracing My Markings. Girl, so right now you were telling me you're in New York time right now.
Yeah, New York.
Girl, what are you doing in New York? You can never be in one place. Wait. Before we even get started, let people know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, they could find me, for example, on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. I have the same handle for all of them as Lizbeth de Santana.
Perfect. And you guys, super easy to find her. I found her on TikTok. Please go and follow her. She does amazing work and she shares very important videos, especially for those of us that are first generation here in the States. So, but okay, girl, what are you doing in New York?
You know, I think like growing up, I never imagined myself on this side of the U.S. ever, maybe on a trip, but never to live or like to move here for work. And when I recently finished my PhD program at UC Davis, and when I was on the job search, I kind of stayed away from jobs from the East Coast because I was like, you know what? Like, I've always been that girl who's like very close to her family, very centered on her community. And, you know, this just seemed kind of like a fantasy, right? Like not a dream, because it was never my dream. You know, it was never in my plans, never on my vision board, none of that. But I ended up being here. And I think for me, I remember when I had these options laid out, I was like, I'm pretty sure it's going to be the option that I least think of, right? The one that I'm not even considering as much. I did the interviews, the whole process. And for me, it was just so simple and easy, like a good, like I fit in really well, but my heart was somewhere else, right? Like I wanted to stay in California.
Yeah,
but things ended up working for me to come here, and I'm thankful now that I'm here because it was not ever like in my plans.
Now, right now that you're saying that, I'm wondering if it's because we grew up. Or did you grow up in California?
Yeah, in California. Yeah.
Okay.
LA. So,
yeah. Okay. Yes, yeah. Girl. I'm an LA girly too. Currently I'm in San Diego, but.
Okay.
I was born in LA, and you know, I was raised here in San Diego, but I still, till this day, I have family in LA. We lived there for several years. But I feel like there's something about us growing up that just the East Coast is just not it, girl.
No, and I could tell you, like, my advisors or professors that, you know, they were, you know, keeping track of what I was doing and, you know, me informing them about the job search and the interviews and how the campus visits went. And they would always tell me, you know, the snow, like, beware of the snow. It's so cold for us out there. But now that I'm here, I mean, I did leave during December. So I think that's the reason why I'm not hating it. Right. But I think it's just this idea of like leaving. And I'm also the first born in my parents' like family dynamic. So being the first daughter, it's also like, I think when I told my sister and I texted my family on my way to the airport when I made my decision, I was like, so I'm going to choose New York. And I think for everyone, it was shocking, right? To say, why does she want to leave? And it's not because I wanted to leave. I think it's ingrained in us, right? Like my parents came to the U.S. My dad was also the first in his family to come to the U.S. from Mexico. And I think I always had that in the back, you know, of my mind of like, it's possible because my dad did it.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't have this education that I was now able to gain, but it was just like las ganas, you know, or like the desire or the need to do so.
Yes. I think about that all the time. And I've actually had my dad on this podcast before talk about his experience as a migrant. Because, girl, I'm like, you guys did not have Google back then. My parents migrated in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did you guys know, like, where to go, how to look for housing? You guys don't know the language. Like, tienes que tener unos cajones bien grandotes para poder hacer eso. Like, how did you know? And he's like, I would just ask, and I would look, and I would see, and I'm like, And we put up excuses over here when we got everything, girl.
Yeah, or like we have it better in some capacity, right? And mm-hmm. like you said, resources or connections, the same thing, right? It's a thing admirable to think about our parents' migration stories and how they made it happen and what we can do now with what we have. I think that's where we're always meant to do better. That's why there's this reason of like, you should do better than the previous generation, whatever that better looks like, but to not stay stagnant because our parents never did.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I firmly believe that because, yeah, maybe our parents didn't have all the tools and their parents didn't have all the tools, but you have to leave something still better. And so I even tell my son, I have a soon-to-be 16-year-old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And y siempre le digo, I'm like, you know what? I want you to not have to struggle because we were passed down the struggle. And so even us, todavía tenemos esos, you know, traumas. And unless we go to school and educate ourselves and maybe look into the things to better ourselves, you know, many of us have, you know, money fears, being at a job for, you know, 40 years and being happy with that. Not traveling, no gastar dinero, no esto, you know, because our parents' mentality. And so I said, but I'm letting you go of that mentality. And you don't understand how powerful it is for me to raise you, giving you all the tools that there's here. Porque a mí, no, desafortunadamente, mis papás no sabían mucho of cómo era el sistema aquí en los Estados Unidos. So I went to community college. But my younger brother was able to do something even better than I. He actually went to university.
Okay, yeah.
And that's how it's supposed to be. So I told my son, you're going to be even better than that, you know? And le dije, and all I want you to just know is that you're receiving tools that none of us had.
Yeah. And then you think about, right, it's like, then what else can we pass down besides the tools, right? So it's the lessons, right? Because unfortunately, even for the next generation coming forward, right, so eventually, you know, your son or my kids eventually in the future, they're going to face different obstacles, right? So I think seeing us, I don't want to say endure is the best word, but face these with like bravery or just saying, you know what, regardless of how this looks like right now, I'm going to get through it, yes. Right? Like it's get done or, you know, and it's lessons that I think those, the lessons that we do want to keep from our grandparents, right? Like our parents are those of like, regardless of the obstacles, the structural barriers that they face in the U.S., like, they still did it. You know, yes. Like, I think of my mom to today, like, when I was in Fresno during December, I was, every time I go, I mean, I can't work on my stuff because, first of all, like, I see my family and then I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm here for a while. I shouldn't work as much as I do when I'm not home because this is my family time, right? So disconnecting and not adding more to my plate. But this is my time also to help my mom understand like the legal language and her documents, right? Like documents that she's processing or like she has her cleaning company. So for me, it's kind of funny. Like I went to Wells Fargo with her and, you know, they ask her like, what's your title? And I'm like, oh, yeah, she's a CEO, but she doesn't see herself as that, you know. But I think it's just the fact of like she's a business owner doing the work behind it, right? Like she has X amount of experience since she came to the U.S., right, working in her field. So I think it's just important to, like, to demystify the fact that if you're a CEO or someone who has, like, a business, you need to look a certain way, right? Like, we all have different profiles, and we show up in the world differently. And it's just the power of, like, you being yourself, which I think helps people stay authentic, and people like that, too.
Yes, 100%. Oh my God. And so your mom till this day, she doesn't see herself as a CEO?
Una no, mujerón. It's funny because I asked her, right? Because like I was translating for her because again, like access to Spanish, right? And even if they do understand some English, like the, it's not available all the time, right? Like you have to wait extra time, like 2 weeks more. And I'm like, we don't have that time, right? So I think for me, it's just, and asking her, so what's your title, right? And I gave her the options listed. And she kind of said it like more timid, like CEO, like, can I really say that? And for me, it's like, yeah, you can, because you are, right?
Yes.
Like
you're
doing the work. Like, why can't you own up for that, to that name or title?
Oh my God. I almost, I mean, I always think about, and this is one of the things that I asked my dad is like, imagine having to leave your hometown. Like you had the option, right? You said, I'm choosing New York. But them not having the option and having to leave everything that they know for something that's a huge unknown, a darkness. Oh my God, the anxiety, girl. You're going to be anxiety?
No, and thinking about it too, right? Like in my case, I had like a job lined up, right? And I think for them, even if they have connections of saying, like, at least in my parents' experience, like my dad, it was like cleaning offices as soon as he got here, right? Or working in El Campo. So I think it's just this idea of like how things line up for you, like who's there to back you up. And in their case, they had like an uncle, at least in my dad's case. My mom had her siblings who were here. But in my case, I think about, I'm like, okay, well, I study migration. Right. Like I understand how it is for people who don't have a status. Right. Who are undocumented, like full on undocumented, no DACA, nothing like that. If they manage to do it right with like the lack of this legal paper that gives them the option to work or be legally recognized, then why can I do it? Right. Like what's going to be my struggle then? Right. So It's not homesickness because I'm not homesick because I'm so worked, right? Like I'm working constantly. So for me, it's just kind of, I think how things lined up allowed me to kind of like grow a stronger character in that sense. And going and having the option, like you said, to go back home during the breaks. Yes. And that was my way of consolidating this and also making it easier for my parents. Yeah.
Oh, most definitely. Now, I kind of want to start talking about, girl, when you were growing up, the little girl in Los Angeles, what part of LA are you from?
So I grew up in Compton, California. Went to school in Lynwood.
Oh my goodness, girl.
In Torrance. I've been everywhere, like little pockets here and there, but Compton was like,
home.
I mean, I had my kids there.
Oh my goodness. Oh, girl. No, that little piece of your heart is there.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So as a little girl, what were your aspirations, your dreams?
Yeah, I feel like I don't know. I think like my parents never pushed me to go to school because I think for them it was just, we were good kids. You know, I think they were very fortunate that we weren't like, you know, troublemakers, anything like that. And I think because we would go with them to work, right? So when we were younger, we had babysitters here and there, but they were horrible. Like, that's just, I think that was the only like traumatic part of my childhood, right? Like the care or the lack of care we had from like, you know, these babysitters, which, you know, but I think for me, it was just like the fact that we would always tell my parents, like, just take us with you to work, right? Especially on weekends or at night. And I think that helped build like this strong, like work ethic for us. Because we're little, and what could we do? Either sit around or help take out the trash. Right. Or just look around the cubicles, like offices and things like that. So growing up, I would be exposed to this. Right. Or houses that I was just like, wow, this is a beautiful home. Right. Or talking to the owners. So I would see like women leaders, right, in their own respective fields. One of them, her name is Lisa Molina. And I still remember her because she ran her own, like back in the day, cassette company. Right.
So yes.
Movies. Right. And I think for me, I was like, wow, she's badass, right? Like she was like the man in the house. So for me, I was like, wow, she's awesome, right? And so I think being exposed to that growing up for me allowed me to imagine like I could be whatever I want. I just need to figure out what that looks like, right? But again, you're in the school system in LA. I grew up knowing that my middle school could be shut down at any moment because we weren't meeting state standards for testing. So it was just like, wow, drilled on us, right? You need to pass these exams. Like everyone needs to pass because if not, we're going to lose funding, the school's closing. So I had that fear on me, right? All the time of like, oh, we know we don't have access to like the best education, but what we have works, right? So again, like all of these little things, but I think meeting professors, I think that's where I ended up choosing Spanish as like my major in undergrad, master's, and PhD, because those were the teachers that opened up my eyes to saying, if you want to be in education, right, like a high school teacher, for example, which was my ambition back in the day, it was like, it's doable. Just follow these steps, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I had no one to look up to, right? Like, there's no doctors, no, like, lawyers, no police, or whatever, all these fields, you know, that you grow up with people, like, telling you, when you grow up, you're going to be an astronaut, all these things. Like, I didn't have that, but I was good at math, but I ended up choosing literature because I think back then, going back and forth through, like, Guadalajara and then living in the U.S. allowed me to see, like, there's a lot of power and value in being able to communicate with your family. And that's where I think it all just started, like, creating this domino effect to lead me to what my life is now.
Wow. So entonces, you know, growing up, you saw the lack of representation. However, yeah, you were able to see how other people were living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, and see that maybe that was an option.
Yeah, fancy homes and stuff. Because I remember when we lived in San Pedro, that was like our first apartment when I was born in Torrance, but we lived in San Pedro, right by the fish market. So for us, was like, you know, like, I grew up there, so I'm very proud of that. But my mom used to cut hair back in the day, and the owner ended up becoming my madrina for my 15th. But we would always, like, stop by their home, but it was a mansion in San Pedro. So I was like, who are, like, I knew of them. I knew who they were, like, growing up, but I never, you know, I was like, how do my parents know them, right? But it was because my mom used to cut hair in her salon. And just to kind of see, like, the life and, like, just the, and her husband was an immigrant, a Mexican immigrant who just became this huge sensation in his business. And I think for me, that allowed me to see, like, if you really, like, put your efforts into it, you could become someone that can contribute to society. It doesn't always have to be money-wise, but what you have to say will be valued by people. Yeah. But you need to have that foundation behind you.
Yes. But I think, I mean, you know, kind of what we were reverting back to, especially our parents, I feel like that generation is so humble that for them, como dices, you know, like your mommy not being able to say that she's CEO or not feeling comfortable saying that she's CEO, because I feel like most of us, I mean, we carry that imposter syndrome. Do we really belong? Because this is really not a place that welcomes you either. If anything, and that's one of the things when I was looking into, you know, you studying Mexican-American, like, studies and stuff and having your doctorate on that, dije, I've always liked that conversation because I took, when I was in college, I took a course, the Mexican-American history, and girl, I learned so much. I didn't even know, like, what were the proper terms for us first generations, learning all that. And I think it helped me understand también maybe where some of our older siblings are, right? I have a brother that's 11 years older than me and a sister that's 9 years older than me. And their experience here has been very different from mine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the lifestyle that they fell into, the lifestyle that was at that time that they had to survive in.
Right. And available to them, right?
Like, and available to
access. Yeah.
Yes. And I never understood that before. I was like, why would they struggle? Like, they're cool, you know, and they weren't fat kids. They weren't skinny kids. They weren't short kids. Like, why were you guys getting bullied? Well, you know, because they didn't speak the language, you know, because at home it was just Spanish.
Right.
And then the school system in LA, like you said, you don't have the best access to it either. So you're kind of like stuck. But I wanted to talk to you about that. What, first of all, can you just like clarify, what is the right term for first generations? Are we Chicanos, Latinos, Mexican American? What are we, girl?
So, you know, I grew up knowing that I was Mexican-American. right? And I was very, very proud. And I would make sure that the Mexican part would come first because that's just, you know, like who I was. And I think it had to do a lot with my parents always taking us in August, specifically to Guadalajara, like to my mom's rancho near Guadalajara and my dad's pueblo. So I think for me, I was very proud of our roots and speaking Spanish. Like I knew that I had access to two languages and I had the possibility of supporting my parents and understanding what their documents or helping them do their business invoices, right? Of like, okay, I know how to write numbers in English. Let me help you do this. So I knew there was a lot of things to be proud of, right? But again, being in the, I don't know if it's just LA exclusive, but I think just in our experiences, which I think there's a lot of echoes in there, right? It's either you become the nerdy kid or the kid that gets pulled into gang life or gets criminalized, right? So I noticed that right away. In my school, in my middle school specifically, we ended up having uniforms enforced because we couldn't wear red or blue, right? Because those were affiliated to gangs. Also, but I mean, we still did it, right? Like under our clothes, we had like a form of resistance, usually wearing red or blue, depending on what you wanted to do, but we found ways of resistance, right? But I think later on, it was in college when I figured out and came to terms of who I was, because Mexican American never really fully sat right with me because I knew that there was more of who I was, right? And I would always try to figure out, like, what is it? What is this missing identity that I have? So it was like a long search of like finding my place in the U.S. because I knew I didn't fully belong here. And in Mexico, I mean, my family was always, you know, warm to us and caring, but I knew I wasn't full on Mexican either, right? Because I had access to more privilege than they ever did. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I had a passport, you know, I think that's always something that allowed me to see that they knew that I could always come back and go. But it was, I think for me, the moment that I realized as a kid, right, as the oldest, we were walking from our home in Bell Gardens because we used to go to Bell Gardens Elementary School. And I was pressing the button to cross the light. It was just a couple blocks from our home. So I was able to just take my siblings with me. And then this white man grabs my arm, right? Like my muñeca. That's why I learned the word muñeca. You see, like the little trauma things. But yes. He grabs my hand. He's smoking a cigar. You're a kid. You don't think anything bad is going to happen. So he grabs my hand. And I wasn't pressing it like being annoying. I pressed it like 2-3 times so it could like turn for us to walk. And he grabs my hand and he like burns my hand with a cigar. And in that moment, I was shocked. I was like, wait, what's happening? Like, I couldn't cry because I think for me, it was like the moment of how do I react to this? Because it was my first time ever experiencing like a physical microaggression in that sense. So still to today, I have it, right? So I think for me, it's kind of a reminder that we do belong here legally, but it doesn't mean that society is going to like respect you or your body. And we see that with like right now with talks about like women's like body and like your rights, right? So I think for me, that was like the moment where I'm like, okay, you need to wake up because this is how life really is. And I think that's where life spiraled to see how the reality is, right? Of like why there's certain white people that hate towards or really do want Mexicans out of this country, not knowing the history right behind, especially in California, right? Which was before part of Mexico. And I think not having like ethnic studies available to everyone allows people to remain ignorant, right? And
yes,
really take on that through violence and not caring about children. So at that time, I think I was like second, third grade because my brother was already going with us to school. So I think for me, and I never told my parents, you know, because I was like, what do I say? Like, I still couldn't find the words to describe like,
well, I don't think your mind at that time, you were so young.
Yeah,
that you didn't even know how to process that, because I couldn't, the feeling that you're saying that you were like kind of shocked, you were trying to process what was going on and you didn't understand. Yeah. Did you, so you didn't cry out, you didn't?
No, and you know what, like, I think for me, it was like this moment of like proving to myself that I was strong enough, right? Because I already had the responsibility of like taking my brothers to school with me, right? So I already felt like grown up in some sense, right? Because I felt that my parents trusted me.
Yeah.
So when this happened, I remember that I never like took out like the ash from my hand. Like I let it sit there as I crossed the street. Right. So I let it sit.
Oh my God, Moe.
Just by walking, like because I didn't want to alert my siblings either. Right. They were little. So I was like, let me just walk to school. I'm almost there. And then I'll figure it out. Right. So.
And the guy never said anything like.
No, he was like one of those like redneck white guys. Mm. I'm like, what is he doing here in Mill Gardens? But they're everywhere.
Yeah, but girl, but just the name itself, California.
Yeah, it's in California, Democratic state, whatever you want to think. It doesn't mean that everyone's going to be in the same like mindset. But it's again, not. I think it's very coward of people to do that too, right? So it just shows you how in history we've seen so many instances of genocides and massacres of people or deportations. So bringing back to your question of like, what should we be called then? I think in college, that's where I figured out like when I was doing my master's, right? Like I'm actually a Chicana. Yes, Mexican American, but I am a first gen, but also a Chicana. And the fact that I do recognize myself as a Chicana brings it back to the Movimiento Chicano, right? Of like understanding your history, the importance behind it, and also sharing that towards the next generations, but for fighting towards social justice and things that you really are passionate about. And that's where I found myself like, finally, I know who I am, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember it was my second semester in the master's, and I was like, I've always been a Chicana. I started learning more about who I was through Gloria Anzaldúa's Borderland. And I remember just going to the bookstore at Fresno State and looking for Spanish books that I needed for my major. And then I was like, let me browse around. And I found the Chicano Studies books. And I was like, what is this, right? And then I looked because it says Borderlands. I was like, what is that? And that's where I was like, wow, she's talking about me, right? And like this mm-hmm. consciousness, double consciousness aspect as well that we would learn about W. Du Bois, but now through like a Chicano lens. And I was like, where has this been all my life? But being Chicana doesn't always mean that everyone's going to accept you.
Oh, of course. Right?
So I think also like telling people I'm from Compton, they're like, oh, there's something wrong with her. Or there's just, it gives people a certain idea of who you are, saying where you're from, right? And then saying now I'm a Chicana, it's just kind of like, it just has negative connotations at the end of the day for so many people who don't understand the history.
That is very true.
Proud of it. Yeah. But I'm proud of it. I'm proud of who the Chicanos were back in the day and currently the ones who are like paving the way for us to like imagine ourselves as whatever we want to be.
Girl. So that's the beauty of it, right? When you are collecting stories of getting to know different people, and most of the, like I had the David, oh my God, I forgot his full name. I'm so sorry, friend. But you know, now he's a dear friend, but he was part of the team that did the Apple logo.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And he was born in Mexico City, and like he told us his story, y también llegó aquí sin nada, his parents and everything. And it's like the whole episode is like full circle, right? Because at first you're right. Like, what is he talking about? You know, because he's talking about his childhood. But how it ties and how his whole life just connected at the end for him is amazing. Y lo que podemos hacer nosotros, right? A Mexican was the one that invented color TV. A Mexican was the one that came up with birth control. Like, there's so many things that Mexicans have done. And I feel like sometimes turn, como dices, even for me, girl, I grew up here, right? I know what it is to not be white enough to be accepted. But then in Mexico, you're not Mexican enough to be accepted either. So es lo mismo, right? Ni de aquí ni de allá.
Yeah.
But growing up, I didn't like the term Chicana.
Yeah, and that's totally fine because you know what? It was always shown to be something negative.
Yes, right? Yes.
It was always like the rebel kids, las pachucas, the gangsters, el pachuco, las cholas, right? Like the hoops. I mean, we see it in style now, right? Because it became, you know, white kind of thing, aesthetic. But back in the day, it was like, oh, those are the troublemaker kids.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And so growing up, I was like, I am not Chicana. Like, I'm not a chola. Like, no. Like, my family is not gangster like that. And then I went to school and I learned and I was like, wow, there's so much kept from us that we don't even know our own history.
Yeah, exactly. And there's power in uncovering that history, right? Because then you start seeing the world through a whole different lens of saying, you know what? It's not bad to say that I am Mexican American, but it's even better to say that I'm a Chicana or Chicano or Chicanx now, right? Of saying like, because I come from a legacy of badass people. That's where we need to like focus on, right? Like thinking about our histories, right? Like our parents came here, but what about the people that came before them, right? So in my case, my grandparents were braceros who came and like helped feed this country and keep it, you know, afloat, right? But what are the things that they get? Nothing, right? So I remember still until my grandpa passed away, they were dealing about the fact that the U.S. government in Mexico stole money from them, right? From the braceros. They never gave them the full money that they needed to be, to have received. So I think for me, it's like, I grew up knowing like, Mexicanos were always going to be mistreated as long as we let our governments, right? Yes. Mexico, the U.S., to do it. So that's why the Chicanos become this like figure, right? That it's so easy to attack because those are the people who, first of all, like understand their rights, stand up for themselves. And that's why, you know, they mobilize. So I think that's where the government doesn't like that. Any government doesn't like their citizens to be awake.
No, please, no. Yes. And I think now, you know, with the platforms that you're seeing being created on social media, the conversation is a little bit more open. Because I remember growing up, it was not okay for you to, like, be too proud of anything. Like,
being proud of being brown.
Like, yes. No, yeah. That was not a thing. You had to keep it hush hush and, you know, don't draw attention to yourself. Don't draw attention to us. And it's funny because I tell my son all the time, I'm like, you know, I remember elementary, middle school and high school. And I don't ever feel like I don't know, maybe because we were exposed to all races and stuff, I didn't feel like there was racism when I was younger.
Yeah.
Except with one teacher. One teacher in middle school really made me feel uncomfortable. She made a lot of people feel uncomfortable. She was white, proud, and very Republican. Yeah. And, you know, she would make us feel uncomfortable, pero you better not say nothing, you better not shush it. You know, you kind of have to go under the radar. And I think that's sad because many of us then kind of stayed behind. Like, I learned about Mexican-American history in college.
that's where history is. I mean, aside of, like, Cinco de Mayo and, like, 15 de Septiembre. Yeah. Like, no one talked about us. Cesar Chavez, tal vez, but, I mean... Yeah.
And even then, we didn't even know the full-on history that Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta. I didn't know Dolores Huerta till I was in college.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, my God, there was a woman leader this whole time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's also important, right, like when Obama was running for president, like he borrowed her slogan, right? Like, yes, we can, si se puede.
Yeah.
And... even when I asked my students this week, like, who did he borrow this slogan from? And they always think of Cesar Chavez. I'm like, no, there's someone behind him also that helped, you know, advocate for, you know, los trabajadores, you know, del campo. So I think for me, it's always important to clarify, but it's unfortunate, like you said, we don't exist really in the K-12 curriculum.
No.
Like, our history is, I mean... And you see what's happening in other states, too, like, you know, Florida and, like, all these really conservative, like, they're banning books, they're banning this type of curriculum because they understand that there's power in people knowing their history.
Knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. Ahorita que estabas diciendo, it's so important, I think, for us, you know, that our parents, for those of us that maybe have nieces and nephews, to really know where we come from to be able to teach them who they yeah. are. Because unfortunately in society right now, it really sucks for me to see so much racism, because I'm like, I love to get to know people, you know. I grew up with Samoans, black, white, hondureños, guatemaltecos, you know, colombianos, de todo aquí teníamos, you know, growing up. And it was beautiful, girl. Like, you know, from learning that my Puerto Rican friend, a torta for her was a cake. You know,
yeah, exactly.
But that was yeah. like super cool. I was like, oh my god, you know, I would call cakes tortas, and yeah. that was cool. I don't know, a mí siempre me gustó eso, you know. And so now to see the state that we're in, and that everything is so touchy-feely, and people are literally judging you. I always thought about, why do people get, why is there racism? Like, is it really just the color of your skin? Mm-hmm. Is it really? Like, it just, it can't fit in my, how are we fighting over that?
Yeah. I mean, we fight, and going back to like, how should we call ourselves, right? Like, there's also debates about that, right? We are no longer just Latinos. Are we Latinos or Hispanics, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, what about the term Latinx or Latine? So again, I think as long as we stand clear on how we want others to call us, I think that's where respect comes into play, because we're not going to agree, right? So the same thing with like Mexican American or Chicano is the same thing, right? As long as, you know, now we ask about pronouns, right? What are your preferred pronouns, if you have any, right? So I think it's now understanding that this new generation that's, you know, coming in, they're very more conscious about that, right? Of like, yes. if we're going to disagree, let's at least, you know, treat each other with dignity. But again, that's not always happening.
No, 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 no. And everything, I always have a strong feeling, everything always starts at home. So yeah. I mean, it depends on the education that we're giving our kids, the yeah. example that we're setting for them, because sometimes they can hear our words, but our actions speak louder than our words.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, todo eso tiene que ver. So it's very important to be on that. I kind of now want to segue a little bit into the work that you do. Girl, the murals that you have done. I was so upset because I did not know you were in Playas. Yes. And I'm like, oh, man. I could have met you when you were down there. But the work that you do is so beautiful, girl. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? What are you trying to conquer with these murals and with the stories that you're collecting?
Yeah, so thank you for that first, you know, because I think, you know, like to begin with, like the Plaza Tijuana Mural Project, like all of these projects exist because people are willing to tell their stories, right? And not only to me, but to a group of like researchers that are part of the Humanizing Deportation Project. And this project was born in 2016 in the loom of like Donald Trump becoming president, right? Of like us getting the election results and then traveling to Tijuana to receive, you know, workshops regarding like digital storytelling, which is a method that we use, right, to support and documenting stories so people who had faced deportation, specifically in Tijuana during that time. So this mural comes, you know, to mind during that trip to Tijuana, Plaza Tijuana 2016. Like I grew up, like I mentioned, right, going back and forth between Mexico and the U.S., but I never had the chance to be a tourist, right? So it's a different type of migration or crossing borders, right? Like you go because either your family's leaving you with the grandparents or like something's happening, right? Like you're visiting. But nunca for, you know, leisure or like the things that we can do now.
Yes.
And so Plaza Tijuana was never in my radar until I went to that trip. So I was very, very nervous going into this trip because first of all, like for me, it's like, how do I explain that I haven't been in Mexico for like 10 years? I think around that time, it was close to 10 years. And I think for me, it was just like, I was nervous because I was like, this is, you know, my parents' country and I haven't been here for so long, right? Mm-hmm. For many reasons. But now going to Plaza Tijuana, like I mentioned to my dad, like, you know, I applied to be a part of this research group and, you know, I was, you know, accepted, you know, and like it was my first semester as a PhD student and I was like, I didn't know we could do something so important, right? Because again, I was in a very traditional Spanish field, and collecting stories of real people just seemed something that sociologists, anthropologists would do, but not someone in Spanish, right? So I was like, wow, there's power again in like story sharing. So we get to Plaza Tijuana, the whole team, and during this whole stay, I was just like, I think something happened within me being in Tijuana, seeing the border like constantly, and then when I started doing Phil's work, and I was like, how do I keep telling people what I'm seeing when I was in a way kind of quote unquote forbidden from writing a blog about what I was witnessing? So I turned to photography to document, you know, so instead of having like a written field diary, I would have photos to document these experiences. I still have them, right? And they're actually printed photos. So for me, that became a way of like, how do I make sense of what I'm seeing, right, in person and hearing? And that's where social media became an important aspect of my work, right? Of like not just documenting my personal life, but it was, okay, let me take that down and just become like this researcher that is going to tell people what I'm seeing through my own lens and uplifting these voices aside from just the digital stories. And it didn't feel like enough either way, right? So yes, people would see and like ask me about it. But then I would always come back to the U.S., right? So we would do our field work. I did field work in Guadalajara and then Tijuana. And then we had a chance to visit Ciudad de Mexico too eventually. So for me, it was just like, I could do more. You know what I mean? Like, I know how to tell stories because I come from like this legacy of like family that tells stories, right? And we all do, right? It's just the fact that we're willing to sit down and listen, right? To know their truth, their stories. And for me, visiting Plaza Tijuana specifically, there's, well, not anymore. Like, it's actually being taken down through, the, like, the new reconstruction of the border fence. But there's this place called Friendship Park. And it's still there. But the murals that existed back in the day are being brought down, right? Are erased from the border. But I feel very thankful and, in a sense, blessed at the fact that the Plaza Tijuana Mural Project is the only mural that is left behind, like the one that they didn't touch. Yeah. Right. So I think that communicates so much behind it. Knowing that the storytellers, because they would message me back in last summer in 2023 asking, do you know if the mural is going to be taken down? Are they going to erase or silence us again? And for me, it was like, I have no answers, right? Because again, this is larger than us and larger than a mural project. But through the mural project, you know, linking it back to that moment, for me, it became a platform, right, to not only use social media or the stories to advocate for who child arrivals are and for their legal return to the U.S. or to become aware of what that means and to prevent deportations, right? Or just to allow people in Tijuana, honestly, to understand that people who are staying in Tijuana or recent arrivals there, they're not bad people, right? Like, they all have a story behind it, which is complex. And we have to, like, understand that one day we could be in their shoes.
Yes.
Right? And I think with the mural project and the collaboration that I had with the storytellers, Enrique Chiu, who helped facilitate the space, and the artist, Mauro Carrera, like, all of these people came to play to make something like this happen. But at that time, it was just a mural for the same storytellers. It never was envisioned to be something of, like, what it became now. Right. And so today I'm still talking about it, right? Like doing presentations and or using that as an inspiration to do another mural, but now at El Paso Juarez border. So I think it's just the fact that it's just storytelling, people's stories, regular people's stories, people who were criminalized, the ones that we hardly ever hear about on the news. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that I wanted to uplift, right? Because we all deserve some type of visibility and respect. And I think uplifting their stories, even if they can't come back to the U.S., allows us to see how contemporary migration looks like right now.
Yes. Yes. And I think most of them don't understand, you know, when I'm talking about, like, my father, he was like, why do you want my story on your podcast? And I'm like, you don't understand the importance of us knowing what you guys have been through, what you guys have experienced, because everybody has a different experience. And so the power of you being validated, right? And as a father, I was able to understand him a little bit more. And I'm like, if you can collect somebody's story and have it forever and then even pass down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful thing to do. And I think the people that are overseen, many, oh, como me molesta when, you know, they're like, oh, another Mexican. I'm like, we're not all Mexican migrating.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, there's some from Latin America, and Latin America is humongous, you know. Pueden ser de Peru, de Ecuador, de Colombia, Venezuela, Argentina. You never know. We're not all Mexican, you know. And, exactly. And that alone shows the ignorance that we have here.
Yeah, and even if people, like, why do people always think it's Mexicans, right? Again, it's the narrative that we construct, right? But again, I think it's very, very important to highlight the fact that we all have, like, now, like, going back to how we started talking, like, the resources to research, right? You don't have to go to college to understand this history. Go on TikTok, look for the videos, right? Make sure that it's, like, reliable information, too. Go on YouTube, like, play a podcast, do something to stop being as ignorant as, you know, the most, like, general idea of, like, who U.S. Americans are, right? Which they can't even understand the fact that Latin America is so huge, composed of so many countries, and that our interventions there have caused, right, and triggered the migration to the U.S. So we, the people ask, why the U.S.? I mean, like, well, what have we done, right, to cause this?
Yes, yes. Este, because, I mean, it's important for us to take responsibility for our part, right? And so, oh my God, girl, going through school, you know, learning about Chicano studies, Mexican American studies, how was that? You know, and I mean it in the sense of, like, I want to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly, because a lot of people might think, you know, oh, she's a doctor, you just have to go to school so many years, you know, you easy, or other people could see it as something that's impossible. But I feel like it's neither. It's kind of like a balance, and you have to be very passionate, pero aún así toma mucho esfuerzo, mucha disciplina. And I just want to hear your experience about it.
Yeah, so I think for me, and you know, when I think about it and reflect about my time at, for example, at Fresno State, right, which I owe so much of my formation and, like, the way that I think, or, like, the activism and human rights lens that I have to Fresno State more than UC Davis. And I think for people, it's like, oh my God, how can she say that when it's, like, a state school versus a UC?
Yeah.
But I think, again, it goes back to this fact of, like, people undervaluing the Central Valley, Fresno, or, like, thinking of the Central Valley as just the place that you drive through or skip, right?
Yes.
But then forget about, like, this long and very important history that it has, right? Like, the UFW and just so many, many things, right? So I think for me, I'm always proud to say that, right? Of, like, I understand that, you know, UC Davis gave me, like, the final stamp that I needed, right? Which I couldn't get at Fresno State because we don't have a PhD for what I wanted to do. But I think when I started school, I always felt, like, you know, like, kind of, like, pushed into knowing more about my history. But there was not a lot of Mexican history classes, literature. Every time I signed up for the literature class, it was at a time where it overlapped with work, because I had to work while going to school. So there was no option for me to, like, be able to, like, to just go to school. Like, I had other commitments, right? So I never learned my history, right? It was just the things that I hear from my dad or movies or, like, my own research outside of school. But, you know, first of all, entering into college wasn't easy. My counselors in high school were like, why do you even want to apply to the Ivy Leagues? Why do you want to, like, do these test preps to apply and be eligible, or, like, have, like, the same, like, level up the playing field, right? Because, again, I come from, like, a more underrepresented and underserved community as well. So it's just, how do I make sure that I'm fit, right, enough to at least have them see my application? But a lot of resistance from the counselors in my high school. And again, there were white counselors. And for me, it was just like, if the people are supposed to be here to help me are not helping me, who do I go to? right? And that's where I started becoming very angry when I was finishing school. So it was junior year, I was taking AP classes, like the most things that you can do, extracurriculars, anything, just to make sure that I was like a good candidate for college. And then I had options to go to USC or to go to Fresno, and I decided for Fresno for family reasons. But I think for me, it's just going in, and I was like, you know what, regardless of where I'm at, I'm going to make this the best that I can, right? So again, I think I was very fortunate being in a college where I saw so many people that looked like me, and that, you know, we understood each other, that we never had these talks about imposter syndrome. I never had imposter syndrome at Fresno State, never. I think what I did have was the fact that I wanted more support from my professors, right? Especially the, what is she, like a Hispanic, I guess, Hispanic professors who would see my drive and passion of doing so much. And in her case, it was the fact that she said, you're doing too much, that I'm going to lower your grade because you're doing so much. Like, you should just be a student. And I was already in a master's. Think about this.
Oh, my God. And
that was like a wake up call of saying, not everyone who is Hispanic, Latina, woman, a woman who speaks Spanish, right, is going to be an ally to you. That was one of like the most things that for me kind of like allowed me to see again, right, like at this incident when I was a little kid, like, now someone that, you know, studies the same thing as you do and who I wanted to be my advisor during that time, for me, it was just like, not everyone's going to be an ally to you. And the quicker that you find that out and understand that, the better, right? So for me, that was something that I learned through the punches, right? So my dad always would tell me, like, for a diamond to exist, it has to be like tallado, right? Like, you have to go through it. Like, you're not going to become this thing until you go through like all of these scratches and things. I'm like, oh my God, but sometimes, you know, you're just like, what do you do?
No, but we're human, so you're going to feel it. Yeah. I would have been.
You're going to feel it.
You're going to be. I would have been feeling like let down, because it's,
yes,
like,
I was.
Why aren't you excited for me? Why aren't you guiding me a little bit more when I see myself in you?
Exactly. Or like, exactly. So again, going back to this idea of like, who are the role models you look up to? And for me, she was one of them. Like, I would sit in her classes. I would ask her like, hey, like, I'm doing this and that. I want to do like a honors thesis with you. And she said, okay, come to my class. I would go religiously. I would participate, like, again, on top of my regular classes, work, family stuff. But it wasn't enough, right? Again, it wasn't enough. So I was just like, you know what? I dropped her. I didn't care. But when I was planning to apply for PhDs, and I was actually now, you know, applying for PhDs, I saw her and she told me, well, just know that Fresno State does not prepare students for a PhD. So you're not going to get in. It's totally fine. You keep trying, but I would suggest to look for something else. Oh my God. For me, it was just like, I have so much respect for people. I didn't say anything to her. I was just like, oh, thanks. And just avoided her. Like, I avoided her so much. And once I got into UC Davis and I said yes to UC Davis, she started calling me colega. And like, she's like, we're going to be great friends and God knows what. And like, for me, I was just like, I could never be friends with someone like you, because when I needed the support, the help to get to this starting point, right? Which just getting in is just something. Staying in the program is a whole nother ordeal. But I think she was one of my biggest teachers in understanding that even in the PhD, I would confront someone just like her, right? And I actually wrote a poem about this person. And, you know, it's called Tell Me Your, what was it? Something about something like being a conquistador or something like that. But I wrote a poem about him in UNAM because I needed to speak up. I never told my advisors or anyone. I did go to the admin at school, but nothing was done about her microaggressions and physical microaggressions in that sense. But I think, again, it's women along the way who are closing these doors for women of color. And again, another profesora también that I wanted to work with closed the door on me. And I was just like, you didn't even give me a chance to like tell you who I was. It was just, you saw me first impression, but she was Mexican American. So for me, that was just like, it hit harder because the other ones were from Spain, but this one was Mexican American. I was like, como? Like, how do I explain that? you know, to myself, you understand. Ekis, whatever. So eventually, you know, once I finished my PhD, she came up to me and, you know, recognized my work, right? So again, I think for me, it was just kind of like having these teachers that I didn't choose, but life was like, you need to learn. If you want to stay in this adventure in academia, like, you're going to face so many people that, like, sharks and people who are always going to be like thinking of you as less just because of your background, of how you look, how you speak, right? Things like that. Or like the references you make. So, I mean, I think for me, it's just like knowing that has helped me to just like, even now in New York, it's just like, you know what? Like, I've gone through so much. Like, what's next?
Se te resbala, yeah.
I don't pay attention to it.
And you shouldn't. No. You know, you're not responsible for other people's ignorance. Plain and simple. But what was I gonna say? That is just so true, what you just said. And I'm trying to add to it because I think it's a very important topic that I don't think we bring it up enough, and that's of how we support one another. I always say,
we show up for each other.
Yes, I always say, unidos somos más, and that's the thing, you know. If we were all to get along, girl, we'd be like France, you know, throwing crab all over the building, the governor. But of course they don't want to see us united, you know. There's always tension between especially in the hoods, I feel like Black and Mexican. But if Black and Mexican were to get together, girl, we would be in trouble.
But they're like, again, there's power in having us, first of all, not in the table, right? Like, not in conversation with like things that will impact our
that features, is true,
right? Like, there's so much power in, like, even if there are Latinos, right, in politics right now, but what are their mindsets, right? And again, I feel for many of them who are there, porque for me it's just like, damn, for you to get there, first of all, and to stay there, you have to compromise so many values and morals. So I can't criticize them, but I do want them to do better.
Of course. Y tenemos que apoyar. And I think, you know, the kind of work that you're doing and that I'm doing is that we're leaving something behind for those that are coming behind us, right? This kind of makes me think about a few weeks ago, or what was it? No, it was a couple months ago. The George Lopez thing, girl.
Oh, yeah.
And I think most of the mentality is like that, right? Which I 100% agree. I feel like everybody should work for what they have, right? Nobody's giving out handouts. Like, nobody comes and just gives you something for free. Yeah. You have to work for it. However, why am I going to stop somebody else's hustle?
Yeah. Like, amique, right? It's like, and I feel like, I don't know. I think it's just like the mindset again of like how I grew up with my parents. My parents never in my mind or memory talked down on someone else's business. It was more like, oh, I recommend este jardinero. And like, I gave him some of my cards so they could recommend my business, including carpets, offices. It's always been this idea of collaboration or support.
Yes.
You know, I grew up seeing tarjetas de diferente gente en el carro. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, you know, like, cada quien sus cosas, but you're never going to be like, oh, you shouldn't hire this person because, I mean, you're adding so much energy or using energy that you could be using for yourself.
Yeah. Say it louder, girl. Say it louder.
Because I've been in that same on the other end, receiving end, right, of people kind of like going out of their way to like close doors. But I'm like, close those doors because you doing that is opening otras cosas. You know what I mean? Like windows. I don't know, cualquier cosita, you know?
Yeah.
There's always a broken window somewhere that we could get in through.
Oh, girl, especially us, you know, El Chapo taught us about tunnels and stuff. Si no nos dejan por un lado, entramos por otro. But I feel like, you know, kind of highlighting that is very important. Don't ever stop anybody's Don't be in anybody's way. I am glad that you learned that early on, because it's so true. I've interviewed Chicanas, and I'm like, yes, like, you know, like, we come from the same barrio, especially when you, certain people paint themselves a certain way on social media, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then when you meet them, it's something else. And so, and I'm like, I won't put that interview out there. If I don't feel chemistry.
And no, because at the end of the day, it's also a reflection of you.
Yes.
That's how I see it too, right? It's like on TikTok, when we repost something, it's like you didn't make that content, but that message reflects you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so, yeah, if the vibe is off, and I don't like gatekeepers, because I feel like todos venimos aquí buscando una oportunidad, and if I can help you in any way, then help. And I even hate the saying, you know, el peor enemigo de un mexicano es otro mexicano.
Oh, yeah.
And it's true sometimes. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true, but it doesn't have to be that way.
¿Cómo se llama ese? The analogy of the cangrejo, right? Like, I grew up with my dad telling me that one too, right? So I think for me, it's like, it's not everyone, of course, right? But it's always, I think, with social media now, and I think we see on so many TikToks and people make sounds of them, right? Like, who are your real supporters? And I'm thankful to say that besides my own family, like my immediate family, like my parents, my siblings, my two siblings, besides them, it's always people who I meet online who are like, how can I help you? Or people who, like, we interacted once in person, or they know me from something. They're like, I believe in your vision. I believe in you. How can I help you? Like, straight up those type of words versus my, well, what I thought was my intimate circle. After I finished my PhD, it was like gone silence. And for me, that was like a huge, like, ¿cómo se puede decir? Awakening of saying, damn, like, I needed you throughout this whole journey as well, right? Like, you need your friends. You need that support. But where are you when you don't need something from me? Right. So that's where I think for me, it's like being in New York allows you to understand that it's you, but you and the community that you choose to create.
Yes.
So be selective of who takes up your energy and your time. So for me now, it's like people hit me up like, I'm going to New York. I'm like, I don't answer, because again, when you had me near you, like a couple steps away, or like estamos en la misma ciudad, like, it's ghost town, right? So I think for me, it's like I found people now that deserve my time, or, you know, or the work that I'm doing regarding like immigration and deportation. For me, that's where my whole heart is at right now. So I don't have the capacity to like bring in other things. Porque te digo que like people I've trusted, like estas profesoras that I mentioned or that I wanted to like be a part of my life showed me otherwise. So I think for me, I'm more guarded now, pero not in the sense of like, not letting no one in, but more like being selective.
Yes.
And I think that's where you have the power to choose how you want to react and show up in the world. So that's for me, that's helping.
Yes.
Of like, I need my time, and we'll see eventually. Pero I think for me, it's like, be true to yourself, because if you're lying to yourself, and lying means sustaining friendships or, I don't know, like, ties that no longer serve you, then you're wasting your time. You're not being true to yourself. And for me, like, lying to myself is the worst.
No, pues sí. No, no, no. And it doesn't take you anywhere anyways.
No.
So I know that you have, like, your website, and I know you have, like, different projects going on. You're also a professor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And girl, you're doing it all. So I really appreciate you, you know, giving me this time. Y nomás quiero dejar saber, you know, is there anywhere else that we can go and find the stories that you're sharing? Do you have like a podcast, a YouTube channel, or anything?
Yeah, so through my website, I decided to just cater everything there, right? To like host it as my digital portfolio, right? Including like the work that I'm doing through like the activism lens, or my professor life type of thing, publications or just interviews and things like that. So if people look up like LisbethDeLaCruzSantana.com, they'll be able to access this, all of these projects, right? So the Humanizing Deportation Project is linked there as well. I'm also a part and co-director of the Leave No One Behind Mural Project. And then also participated as a director of the Documented Dreams Without Borders Digital Storytelling Project, the Plaza Tijuana Mural Project as well, and the upcoming El Paso del Norte Mural Project, which right now has taken up more of my time because I'm so passionate about it. And I'm really excited to make this project happen in Texas, specifically at the border in Juarez y El Paso. And I'm thankful again for like the people who, I mean, I've never seen them in person and they're like, how can I help you? Yeah. And they're the ones connecting me with people and resources. And I think for me, that's just like, it shows you that we all come from different parts of the world, different upbringings, but we have this thing in common. And I think that's where you find your people.
Yes. Yes. And your life will change when you find your people.
Oh, yeah. You feel lighter, happier, and like, you don't know, it's my better.
Yes. Yes. Because you want people that are motivating you, that are cheering for you, that are calling you out respectfully. Yeah, respectfully. Exactly. And that they're there cuando necesitas, you know, and vice versa, you as well for them. Because it's not a one way street. You have to have a two way street. So, no, definitely. I really like you. I like you a lot. I love what you're doing. I mean, I know I have nothing to do with how you grew up, but I feel so proud of you as a Latina. Te felicito. The fact that you can call yourself doctora.
I know, it's still something that I'm like, okay, let me pick up those two little words at the beginning.
So, you know, and it's pretty cool because I don't know if you know, do you know Carlis de la Cruz?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's also a lawyer, so the de la Cruz name is up there, girl.
Yeah, the last name, yeah.
You guys are giving it such good names. Or, ¿cómo se dice good?
Like more visibility, because growing up, I mean, besides my name, de la Cruz was hardly ever, like, in the class roster. So for me, it was just like, oh, like, another de la Cruz somewhere.
Yes, yes. Pero sí, I thank you so much for coming. I hope you guys enjoyed this video. Please go and follow her. If you guys are watching us, it'll be on the screen. If you're just hearing us, go to the description box and I'll have her links there. Thank you so much for joining us, Lisbeth.
Thank you so much for the space, también.
Cuídate. And we'll say... Yes, yes. You better come back after you finish the El Paso one. I want to see that one.
Oh, yeah. Gracias.
All right, girlie, bye. I want to hear your story or I want to support your small business. To do so, please go ahead and visit embracingmymarkings.com. Thank you for tuning in.